You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and John Hawksworth.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as the brilliant Bryson DeChambeau is at his imperious best in claiming the Omega Dubai Desert Classic.
It's not about winning by 7 or 10 or whatever, even just winning by 1. It's about what I know I can do. And so I've got a certain expectation value. And yeah, obviously winning is fantastic, but you know, I want to do my absolute best every time I come out here.
The American held off a quality field, including the likes of Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, and second-placed Matt Wallace.
Really good in parts, really shabby in part. Not good enough to put any pressure on, but just about good enough to get second. So I've got to take the positives from that, but overall happy here.
And Matt will join us later in the show. Plus, we have all the reaction and analysis from Dubai to come, and we'll look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Saudi International, powered by SBIA. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say I'm joined by former European Tour player John Hawksworth, who's made his way down from the frozen north, still wearing plenty of layers, John.
Absolutely. Have you not been outside?
It's cold, parking. But you've got a coat, you've got a jumper, you've got a shirt, you've got a T-shirt underneath that. Any particular reason?
It's called clothing.
Really? Before we came in here, you said you've got your jacket or your jumper on that you're doing your painting in. Is this what you do in your spare time? Have you been painting a house, or what have you been doing?
I have, actually. I've been painting my house, but put the wrong sweater on yesterday.
I see.
Anyway.
So you got the same
Nobody's
sweater?
Noticed.
No, not yet. And apart from you told us. Also alongside me on the Race to Dubai podcast, Jack Hayward, the Golfing World producer who's come from a lot closer to home. Jack, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, just come from across the office.
So, indeed.
Not a long walk.
And no painting over the course of the weekend?
No, not for me.
Only one place to start, apart from John's attire, and that is Bryson DeChambeau's success in the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. 24 under in the end, easily winning. Matt Wallace on 17 under, back in third on 16 under. A four-way tie of Paul Waring, Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia and Alvaro Quiroz. Fantastic win. Birdied the first three, John, in the fourth and final round and never looked back.
No, he's a class player. He was the highest-ranked player in the field, ranked number 5. But to shoot level 66, he's around there. It's a good few years since I played it, and it's been tweaked. It's a very good golf course. 24 under is an amazing score to win by 7. It's, what, nearly a shot per 9 holes over the 4 rounds, better than the rest of the field, which is an awful lot, but that's his fourth win in 9 starts. Plays the game a little bit strangely, I would have to say. It always strikes me that the lights are on with him, but the switches are not operating the right bulbs.
You say that, John, but...
I do.
Surely he's, you know, one of the world's best players. Does it really matter how about he goes his game?
It takes too long on the golf course for me. They're trying to speed the game up. If he's the future of golf, I don't think it's good news. He's taking over 45 seconds a shot. Some of the stuff he equates in, for me, is rubbish and not necessary. They're saying he's going to change the game. I disagree.
But he's winning, Jack.
He is. It's hard to argue with that. He had 9 players shot 66 or better on Sunday, which is a pretty incredible final day of scoring, and yet he still won by 7 shots. So, you know, that's pretty remarkable going from Bryson. I kind of fall somewhere between John, where John's going with this, and, you know, the kind of him being the future of the game, because he's definitely thinking about golf in a way that a lot of people haven't considered before, which is to be admired on some level. But John's completely right. It is taking too long at the moment.
Well, what does he do differently then, John?
It's preparation. The whole problem with slow play is no player is ready to hit until it's their turn. When we used to play, you would do your preparation while the other guy's doing it. Psychologists teach you not to do anything until it's your turn. That is what slows the game down. But he slows it down even more by the stuff that he equates into every shot, the density of the soil. I mean, come on. It's a game of golf at the end of the day.
But he's not going to change, is he? And golf
well, he may not
change.
He's not the only one, is he? He may not. He's the only one who thinks along those lines. It takes too long. The game needs to be quickened up to make it more attractive for people to play and to watch. And for me, he is not the future of promoting that.
But if he's winning, Jack, and younger players are watching him, they're going to think, well, that's the way to go, I guess. Is that potentially one of the problems?
Yeah, I think young players and fellow tour pros as well. I think some of the other tour pros are going to go down that route as well and have to kind of sit up and take note of the effectiveness of his methods, despite the obvious problems of slow play here. But he's a very divisive figure in general. It's not just the slow play. Some of his comments in press conferences will divide the crowd, both in terms of fans and players alike. He was talking yesterday after the win about how he watches other players prepare for their shots and can kind of see their mistakes happening before they happen because of their lack of preparation compared to his, like, incredibly thorough preparation. So I do wonder whether that will rub players up the wrong way or whether it'll actually inspire them to think, yeah, maybe I should follow in his footsteps.
We always wonder where the characters in the game it had gone from, and the amount of television coverage that Tiger Woods has got over the course of the last week when he's been nowhere near the leaderboard. And we want players that spring beyond the game of golf, and if DeChambeau does it, is it that much of a problem?
Tiger's won 14 majors. He's different gravy. 14 majors, and hasn't won one. This would be his 11th year since he won his last major.
So you would rather see players play a lot quicker and
absolutely
play all the same and not have, you know, the spikes outside of golf that DeChambeau gets because he does things differently?
Not everybody the same, but at the end of the day, these whole things with the rules and trying to change things like 3 minutes from five to looking for the ball is designed to quicken it up. He is not quickening the game up. He takes forever and it's unnecessary and something needs to be done about it. And if he was speeded up, I don't think he'd be able to play.
But in DeChambeau's case, I mean, there must have been more stories, more features on television about him, Jack, than pretty much any other player other than Tiger over the last year, because he is winning. I mean, we've got to have something other than just the rank and file that we've had in the previous 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder whether he's getting tired, actually, of some of the questioning about the kind of golf scientist sort of thing and that line of questioning. But he seems to embrace it. You know, all the questions this week he's been asked about his desire to understand golf better than any player has ever understood it before. And that's his kind of his self-proclaimed desire throughout his career. And he says he's about 50, 60% of the way there.
Oh, really?
So John's already upset by how slow he's being at the moment. I think we're potentially only kind of tip of the iceberg with Bryson.
Yes, he's winning golf tournaments and that's great and everything, but it needs to be done in a certain way, and I find it a little bit boring to watch.
John, I wish you'd stop sitting on the fence when I ask you these questions. I wish you'd come out and say what you actually really mean.
Well, I do.
But he's come over to the European Tour, and he's won by an absolute stretch. I mean, I, as a fan of the European Tour, I'm caught between two stools. You want to see the best American players, Jack, but you don't want them to come over here and win by a streak.
But yeah, I think it's a difficult one, but you know, he came to the weakest favourite and he's completely proven that he is one of the very best in the world at the moment. And curiously, didn't actually climb from his fifth place in the world ranking despite winning.
In terms of Bryson's not slow play, but keeping the flag in, we talked about it a bit last week on the show. He keeps it in about, 80, 90% of the time, Jack. Is this something we're going to see more and more of?
Yeah, I think so. It still looks
is it an advantage?
Well, he seems to think so, and he definitely does. You know, despite all the criticism, he definitely does take his preparation very seriously and crunches the numbers more than any other player in world golf at the moment, I think. So, you know, I think people will follow in his lead. I think people already are. He was playing alongside Hao Tong Lee in the final round. Hao Tong was putting with the flag in a lot of the time. And yeah, it's interesting that John's talking about him and his speed of play. And this rule has been designed to speed up play again, like a lot of the rule changes this year. And he's doing it, and he's putting so effectively at the moment.
Matt Wallace was second. Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, Alvaro Quiroz, Paul Waring tied for third. Should we have expected more of a challenge from the European Tour members?
It was great playing from Wallace. Garcia, of course, who won it in 2017. Poulter played well in Abu Dhabi last week. Quiroz has won there. Waring's had his first win recently. I don't think you could have expected any more, because if you look at the scoring, all those guys were in the 60s, but he was just head and shoulders above the rest, DeChambeau. So it was really playing for the other places.
Do you think it was set up for an American to win this week? Has the Emirates got to get a little bit tougher? I mean, 24 under, winning score.
The rough was tough. It's how
24
far they
under
hit it.
Winning score, 17 under second, 16 under tied third. I mean, the course has been around for, 20-odd years? Has he got to get a bit sharper?
It was the 30th anniversary
there
of this
one. There you go.
Back to 89 when Mark James won it. Mm. In fact, I played in 90. You could see the sea from the 18th.
No,
you'd have to go up in a helicopter now.
Has the course changed?
Yeah,
it must have changed.
It's been tweaked. They've made it longer, added a few bunkers in. The greens haven't changed, but obviously the ball goes a long way now, so they've had to change tee positions and that.
Has it got to get a bit tougher, though?
I think you could argue that it could, but I think it's nice to have a mix on tour, isn't it, right? You'd rather have some events which are being won close to par, for sure, but you know, this desert swing is quite a nice ease into the season, so I don't think it's too harmful to have 20 under winning scores winning the tournament.
Let's get a bit of social media reaction, shall we? Bryson DeChambeau, John's best friend, said, "Wow, what a week. Thank you for all of the hospitality this week at Omega Golf Dubai and Emirates Golf Club. Hopefully this is the first of more international victories." Sergio Garcia says, "Very happy with the final charge today and how I'm playing. Congratulations to Bryson on a solid performance off to Saudi Arabia." And Matt Wallace says, "Some guy, Bryson DeChambeau, congrats, mate. See you soon." Well, time to hear from the winner, and it's fair to say Bryson DeChambeau enjoyed his time in Dubai.
For this to be my first international win, I couldn't be happier. And everything about it was great. The trip, everything coming over here, the hospitality, the generosity, you know, and honestly, the love that I got from all the fans and everyone has been fantastic. So it's really a hats off and to everyone that has made this event possible. And appreciation goes out to everyone of the fans out there this week. They've done an incredible job.
I know you wanted to be focused on your own game. It wasn't a match play, but those first three birdies gave you a bit of a cushion from the field. The 10th, however, I saw the first fist bump of the day.
I wanted to separate myself. After nine holes, I knew, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 were not easy holes. And so to get through that with even par, almost making a birdie or two there was nice. But then I knew on the back nine I needed to get after it and shoot 3 or 4 under, and that's what I did.
The missed birdie putt in 16, you gave yourself a really good talking to. Your 7 shots clear. Is this just the kind of level we expect from you?
Well, you know, for me, again, it goes back to what I said in my press conference earlier this week. It's not about winning by 7 or 10 or whatever, even just winning by 1. It's about what I know I can do. And so I've got a certain expectation value. And yeah, obviously winning is fantastic, but you know, I want to do my absolute best every time I come out here.
This tournament has always proven to have a high caliber of winners. When we look at past champions, Fred Couples, Ernie Els, Tiger, Rory, what's it mean to have your name on that trophy?
It's incredibly special. You know, this is one that I've always wanted to get ever since coming here in 2016. It's something that I will forever cherish.
Fourth win in his last 8 tour starts, 9 if we include the Honda in the Bahamas, of course, back end of last year. Is he a major winning waiting to happen this season, do you think, John? I mean, I know you don't like the way he plays and the fact that he takes an awful long over the ball and so on, but in terms of winning a major championship, he's got to get close, hasn't he?
Well, he's playing well, obviously. Winning a major is different gravy. We'll see over the course of the year. Winning events around the world, PGA Tour events, obviously, it helps to try and win a major, but we'll see when the gun goes off, when the Masters starts in April, as to where he is with his game. Has he got the game? Yeah, probably, but time will tell. I'm not holding my breath particularly, but he may well prove me wrong.
We always try and work out which major venue might be best for these players that are getting close to a debut major win, Jack. Is it difficult to say, well, he suits Augusta or he suits Bethpage or Portrush, which we've got in Pebble Beach? It's difficult, isn't it, to try and say, well, Bryson suits that particular venue?
Well, definitely. Now he's proven himself a global winner as well, capable of winning in international territories as well as in the States. He's proven he can win on different sorts of golf courses. So, yeah, it's incredibly hard with a player like Bryson to call it, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see him in the mix at the Masters. I think when he made his debut at the Masters as an amateur, he did very well and got the low amateur prize. So, yeah, maybe watch that space.
Do you know which drink he celebrated with, John?
Oh, I would imagine Lucozade.
It was chocolate milk. Sorry, steal your thunder there.
Yes, chocolate milk. What would you celebrate with, John?
A bottle of my Malbec.
Oh, really?
And then another.
Have you ever had any chocolate milk in your life?
Not in my
Malbec.
You
don't look like a chocolate milk guy.
And then after that Malbec, I'd have had another one just to make sure I enjoyed
it. I'm just thinking the contrast, Jack, between Shane Lowry's win the previous week and Bryson this week and what the celebrations might have been like.
Yeah, the aftermath of the Lowry party looks quite entertaining, didn't it? There's a table full of some bottles and cans, lots of wreckage.
No chocolate milk there, I didn't
see. Oh, no.
For Bryson, it was his first European Tour win in his 19th appearance. Previous best finish at this event was tied for 18th back in 2016 as an amateur. The 225th American winner on the European Tour. John, can you name the other 224?
If you give me a couple of years, yes, probably.
Well, as we've been discussing, back in second place was England's Matt Wallace, and he joins us now on the Race to Dubai show. Matt, Bryson was in such imperious form. Was it one of those days of having to settle for second place?
Yeah, I think after the first 3 holes, he just ran away with it in those first 3. My battle was for second place. My tournament then was to try and get second place, and I'd managed to just get over that line the last couple of holes there.
16th place in Abu Dhabi, second in Dubai. You've started 2019 well. Obviously, you'd like to have won one of them, but in terms of your progression and how the start of the year has gone, are you pleased?
Yeah, massively. Carried on from last year, really. Dubai's been very kind to me, obviously, after the DP World as well, getting second place there behind Danny Willett. And yeah, going from what last year happened, I didn't play great at the start of last year. Was playing some average golf and finishing like in the mid-30s. And this year, I guess I had a bit of my average game in Abu Dhabi and came 15th or 16th. And so that shows improvement in where my game's at. And it was nice to get the juices flowing yesterday and coming down the stretch there trying to get my second place.
You said on Friday that that's the best that you've played tee to green. What clicked on your second round?
I don't know. I think I was working hard with Rocky, my coach, and Liam, and I went home and I was trying to do a couple of things on the golf course which weren't really working. So I went back to stuff that worked last year with a bit of takeaway stuff, keeping it slow and short. And it was really easy for me to think about on the golf course. And it just clicked on Friday perfect. And Saturday, Sunday was a little bit different. I guess my path might have been out a little bit, but the strike wasn't there. So it was a little bit tougher come the weekend. But we'll work on that this week. And if I've got the same swing thoughts, we should be good to go this weekend.
A lot of talk about Bryson's win. What do you make of his performance and how he goes about the game?
Well, it's special, isn't it? It's different. My girlfriend asked me and said, do you think you'll ever do anything like that? And I don't think I'll go to that length that he does, but it obviously makes him feel comfortable. And when he gets on the golf course, it means he's got no excuses to go and play bad golf because he's done everything he possibly can to be ready, you know? And that's what every golfer needs. They need their own thing to be ready to go out there and play golf. And that's his thing. So fair play to him. He was brilliant yesterday. He won the tournament, as I said, in those first couple of holes. And it was easy for him, but he played fantastic. And to shoot 64 on Sunday to win a tournament is pretty special.
Matt, in his press conference after the victory, he spoke about how he can see other players making mistakes before it even happens. I wonder whether that sort of comment kind of rubs not necessarily you, but possibly some players up the wrong way, or whether you think that's a good thing for the game that someone's being so honest.
I was hitting balls next to him on Saturday, late afternoon, evening time. He obviously wasn't happy with where his game's at because he knows he can play better, but I wasn't happy with where my game was at because I wanted to play better than I did on the Saturday and like I did on the Friday. So I was on the range. Anyone who's got those aspirations and goals of playing really good level golf, it doesn't really matter what score you're on. Yes, you might be leading the tournament, but you know that maybe in a major or somewhere down the line, you might not be leading. So you want to get to those levels sooner rather than later and try and get them done. And the way he did that, he came, well, the two guys that were on the range last on Saturday came 1 and 2. So I see there's little bits in him and in myself, and I wouldn't say anyone would get riled about his comments where he said he didn't play his best stuff, but he still won. It's just the levels that he's at. He's fifth in the world. He's going to have high expectation levels, and fair play to him because he's a great player.
And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be the best that you can be. You're both in Saudi Arabia this week, of course. I know you've only just arrived there. What have you made of it so far? Apparently, you're suggesting that it's not really Saudi weather at the minute.
Yeah, it's strange. We came through some cloud in the plane, and then landed to massive flood patches on the runway and loads of rain, and the 50-minute drive here to the golf course was just torrential, and yeah, lots of cloud. It's a little bit different to what Dubai offered us last week, but I don't know what the weather's supposed to be saying this week. It's supposed to be okay, I think, and I'm just looking out of the golf course now and it looks in immaculate condition, so we know that the golf course is going to be in great shape. I've heard good things about it, and it's an exciting new venture for everyone coming here this week.
And obviously it's an amazing field this week, Matt, in Saudi. You've got the likes of Justin Rose, world number one there, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Bryson, as we've mentioned, Patrick Reed, Masters champion, the list goes on. Just how exciting is it to tee up alongside these players, particularly at the stage of your career? I guess it's still a learning experience, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. I played with Ernie yesterday for the first time, and that was special to me. Probably, for me, top 10 best player in the world ever in golf. So it was a privilege to play with him on a Sunday at a golf course he's played so well at before as well. Yeah, I mean, every single week that I tee it up now, I'm teeing out with the best, and it's what I've tried to do my whole life, and I'm living it now, and I'm enjoying every single minute of it. Moved up to 36 in the world, the best for me, and yeah, hopefully it can continue. I'm enjoying every minute of it right now, guys.
And you mentioned playing with Ernie Els, obviously, in Dubai. That must have been a fantastic experience for you. Bryson DeChambeau, at a point of interest, was only 4 months old when Ernie Els won the Dubai Desert Classic in 1994, just to give it some context. What was the biggest takeaway from your experience of playing with Ernie?
From stories, I know how laid back he is, but it was scary how laid back he was on the golf course. You know, he just breezed through the day, strolled through. I think he might have hit one bad shot where he gave it a little cut or something like that, and that was it. And then he carries on and he goes again. I'll take stuff from that from him. I like to try and learn from the best. And we had a good chat on the golf course, mostly about wine, but we had good chats on the golf course. And he's a cool dude and he's a really nice guy and he's playing some good stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised again if he's up there this week.
And one final one from us, Matt, before we let you go. You've got a Masters invite this year. How excited are you going to Augusta?
Nah, not that excited. To be it's been my lifelong dream, isn't it, really, to go to the Masters. And just the second place at DP guaranteed it last year, and it just capped off what was an amazing year to be able to get the Masters invite, to know that I'm going to be playing my first ever Masters. And my birthday's on the Friday of the Masters as well. Birthdays around the Masters every year, and it's so special for me. I love it. I can't wait to get out there. So it's an amazing thing. My caddy Dave's buzzing to get back there as well. So he's had some success around there with Nicky Price and Faldo and a few others, and yeah, it's going to be special, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you play this week and indeed over the course of the year. Many thanks for spending some time with us on the Race to Dubai show, Matt. We really appreciate it. We'll speak again soon.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Well, that was Matt Wallace, John, speaking about his second place finish in Dubai. His rise has been remarkable over the last
few years. Yeah, it has. It looks a very determined character. I don't know him at all, actually, Matt Wallace, even though he's been at events that I've been at, but if you look at his results, what is it, 4 wins on the Race to Dubai in a pretty short career. But you look at him on the golf course, you know, he shoots 70, 64, 69, 68. He did bogey 13, which is a par 5 in the final round. But he birdied the last to jump out of that logjam of players on 16 under, you know, the likes of Waring and Harding were in the clubhouse had set a target. But to birdie the last to jump into second place is huge. He's got lots more wins in him.
Seems very comfortable at the highest level to me, Matt Wallace, and a guy who's played mini tours and won on mini tours. I don't know where he's got the confidence from, whether it's winning those mini tours and coming on, but he's hit the ground running, continues to. He never looks out of place.
Yeah, regardless of the tour, winning is winning. And on the Alps Tour, he won 6 times in that season, didn't he, before getting his break onto the European Tour by winning the co-sanctioned event in Portugal. He's obviously a natural-born winner, I think. He's got it within him, and he just strikes you as an incredibly confident guy. We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, Golfing World in Abu Dhabi, and he was, just phenomenally self-assured, just very comfortable with his place in the game, which is remarkable for a man who's only been on the European Tour for 18 months or so now.
I guess he must have belief then, Jack, that he can go on and do even better in a WGC or a major. Do you sense that when you speak to him?
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a leap at the moment, but he had his best major finish last year at the PGA Championship, finished inside the top 20, got a hole-in-one in that final round, I think it was. So had some good experiences there. Got his first Masters coming up. But he's a strange one because it's taken him a little while to break through. He's 28 years of age, which I think some people take for granted.
Speaking of the Masters, former champ Sergio Garcia was one of a group of players who was tied in thirds in Dubai. But the Spaniard admitted his challenge never really recovered after he lost ground in the middle rounds.
No, it was a good week. I think very happy with the way I played. Obviously disappointed the way I putted Friday and Saturday more than anything. Today I putted nicely. First round was pretty good, pretty solid. But those two rounds in the middle there when I played good golf and pretty much didn't make anything, that put me too far behind. So a little bit of a shame there, but still a solid week. You know, happy with that. And, you know, we just got to keep trying to keep building some more good momentum and, you know, hopefully have a good season.
Your putter showed some interest today. Starting from the 8th, that incredible recovery shot, and then you had 3 birdies on the trot. Just as you were making that turn and climbing the leaderboard, was there a part of you that wanted to check out the leaderboard?
I did check it, and, you know, I played with Bryson the first 2 rounds. I know how well he was playing, or he's playing, and more than anything, how well he's putting. So I knew that, I mean, unless I got to 20 or 21 under, it's still not going to be enough. It was more than anything trying to finish maybe 18, 19 under, finish solo second. But unfortunately, the last 2 holes, a couple of good opportunities there that I let slip away.
Can you tell us your thoughts on Bryson? Like yourself, kind of rose to notoriety very quickly. A lot of people probably don't know what to make of him because of his very scientific, methodical approach to the game.
He's playing very nicely. He's obviously feeling his swing very, very nicely. He's got a lot of confidence going. That helps. And he's putting on his spanning unbelievable. So, you know, when you're doing those things, when you're putting those things together, it's, you know, it's usually a winning combination.
After he won the Masters, he had a bit of a dip, and I thought that maybe his hunger, John, had gone a little bit. But since September of 2018, these are his form figures. 7th in Portugal, winner of the Andalusia Masters, 2nd in South Africa, 9th back in Dubai at the DP World Tour Championship, 6th in Hong Kong, 7th in Singapore, and 3rd last week. Mm. Is he playing as well as ever?
He's playing great stuff. The thing with Sergio's game for me is how confident or lack of confidence he has with the putter. If you go on the driving range and listen to players hit a ball, some players make a different sound. He's one of them. Woods was another one of them. The rest, it's quite hard to separate, but you listen to the noise. He's a great striker, but he goes through periods of where he gets really down on himself with the putter. Els has had it for years now. For Sergio, if he puts well, he's almost unbeatable because he puts the ball in play all the time.
It's interesting you say that because if you look at his putting stats for those tournaments that I've just read out, or at least the last five, he's not finished inside the top 20 and only once finished inside the top 25. That ultimately has prevented him from winning an awful lot more majors, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. He obviously had made those famous comments at Augusta, didn't he, probably about a decade ago now, where he said, I'm never going to win a major. Mm. And obviously it was lovely to see him do it at Augusta a couple of years ago. But yeah, I think he'll feel a bit gutted yesterday about that round. It was a fantastic closing 66, but the drivable par 4, 17th and 18 being a par 5, he could have got a couple of shots close to the lead, par finish, would have been hoping for a birdie finish for sure.
A lot of chat about new rules in 2019, John, and we had a couple of infringements over the course of the event in Dubai. First of all, Li Haotong hit with a two-shot penalty on the 72nd green, dropped him out of the top 10. This was with the caddy helping him align the putt. Just talk us through this. Was it right, wrong? What do you think?
Well, you can't line up anymore. Again, back to slow play. Was it a mistake? It probably was. It's easy to make a mistake. I went to the rules meeting in Abu Dhabi last week just to listen in on it. Obviously not playing anymore, but there's a lot to take in. Obviously, several things, lots of things have changed.
Was it a good meeting? Did you enjoy it? Was your brain a bit frazzled after it?
Did you understand
it all?
It was... No, I didn't, to be fair. But the caddies were in there as well trying to understand it. A lot has changed. Obviously, water hazards in our penalty areas, 3 minutes for searching for the ball. You drop it from knee high. You can move stuff in bunkers.
But the tour's coming for a bit of stick for this one. I mean, just one or two tweets. This is Dick Fulcher's lad, which is Fulcher, the caddy of Justin Rose, who's recovering from minor heart surgery at the moment, was watching Justin Rose win last night. He says, just watched Haotong Li and the two-shot penalty. Total farce, has made the game look stupid. Paul McGinney's weighed in and says, this is so ridiculously marginal. The player should be given the benefit of the doubt. The rule changes are largely about the spirit of the game and player integrity, not this pedanticness.
Well, it's a bedding in period, isn't it? Whether the decision was right or not, it was made. And yeah, people are going to have opinions on it, but there is a lot to get used to at the moment and other things will happen. So we'll see how it beds in. It's going to take a while for players to get used to it.
This was tight though, wasn't it, Jack? I mean, we needed a bit of VAR here, didn't we? Because when you see it on the replay, I mean, the cat moves away, he sort of half addresses the ball, then does he move away ever so slightly? I don't know.
Yeah, it's very harsh.
It's tight.
For me, it's very harsh. I think when you look
at it, it's like your shoulder being offside.
Yeah, it's like watching anything in a kind of a football match. When you watch anything in slow motion, it obviously looks more harsh potentially. But I think, I think it was a tough one. When you see the slow-mo replays, he is only just addressing the ball. And that is the rule. That's the crucial part of this rule, is that it's when he's addressing the ball, he can't be lined up by the caddy on a putt. And it's just as he's addressing that the caddy moves away. So it's incredibly close.
I mean, for Li Haotong, I mean, he's a
cost him about 75 grand.
Well, it cost him a lot of money. I'm not suggesting that he's short of a few quid.
And 10th place on the leaderboard as well.
But yeah, this is it. But if you're, you know, a lesser player who at the end of the year is trying to make sure of your card, I mean, that could be the difference.
Well, it could. But, you know, that's then where you need to be 100% certain of what you're doing. The rules officials are there to help you, though, out on the golf course. They're not there to trip you up, you know. And if you are uncertain, you can always call a rules official. And I think more of that will happen at the moment while they do bed in. But, a little bit unfortunate. But they're taking it to the absolute letter at the moment.
What about Lucas Herbert in the third round?
Scraping sand from behind the ball with his club.
Yeah, was it behind?
Of course it was behind.
I thought it was to the side.
No,
what is the rule? Come on, you're in the rules room. What's the rule?
Well, I've never seen that before. You can move loose impediments with your fingers.
It's a bit of sort of loose.
You can't start digging
grass,
a hole with a spade.
It?
What?
I don't think he was digging a hole with a spade.
I've never seen that where a player's done that with a club.
Well, you know, of course you wouldn't have seen it before because last year you wouldn't have been able to do it. I mean, this is the problem, isn't it, Jack? The rules changed. He thought he could now do that.
Yeah, without the... Yeah, simple
you know,
fact, really.
You can't go near it last year.
You can't do that with a club. Pull stuff away with a club. He could have picked up...
Why on earth did he even attempt it then?
Well, he may have misunderstood the rules. If he'd have known it, he wouldn't have obviously done it, would he? He must have thought he wasn't doing anything wrong.
Yeah, I have less sympathy here for this one compared to Haotong. I think Haotong's incredibly marginal. I think the confusing thing is just where the instinct to do that comes from. We're talking about before the record, John was talking in particular about how, you know, he's never seen anyone get the club in there and kind of flicking away the sand or the loose impediments. It's a strange compulsion, like, to do that from a waste area or a desert area on these golf courses when, you know, whenever the players are used to playing in sand. I know the bunkers and the ruling's different there, but, you know, they're not allowed to test the sand. They're still not allowed to test the sand. I know this is different. But it's just, it's interesting that that was his instinct to dig the club into the ground.
That wasn't a bunker, by the way. That was a waste area.
Yeah, waste area. Yeah.
Waste area is raked at night, and then however it is in the morning, you play from there. You could be in a heel print 3 inches deep. But I've never seen that before. So
no sympathy at all?
Well, not really,
Young man
no.
making his way in the game. John and Jack, forget it, you're out.
Sympathy? Where do you want me to give sympathy?
Well, I don't, just some would be nice from you sometimes, John. You know, you come in here with your laser coats and just do whatever you want. Speaking of doing something, John, we need the top 10 from the Dubai Desert Classic.
Well, actually, it goes down to 11th place. So, Bryson DeChambeau won by 7 shots over Matt Wallace, who was second on his own, then third tied Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, Alvaro Quiroz, former winner, Paul Waring, then seventh tied Justin Harding, Lucas Herbert, Torbjørn Olesen, Jason Scrivener, Lee Westwood, and that makes up the top 11.
And what about the top 10 in the race to Dubai?
Well,
Stanley?
That's led by, at the moment, Shane Lowry won in Abu Dhabi last week. Sterney is second, Oosthuizen third, DeChambeau now fourth, Matt Wallace fifth, David Lipsky sixth, Aaron Rye won in Hong Kong seventh, Joost Luton eighth, David Drysdale ninth, had a great start to the season, and Ian Poulter, 10th.
Now, selections from last week. Making the predictions was Robert Lee and Gordon Brown Jr. A reminder, everybody gets 2 picks, but one has to come from outside of the top 50 from the final positions on the 2018 race to Dubai. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a miscut. Robert Lee, who was giving me some stick indirectly last week, suggested Sergio Garcia, so he did well with tied 3rd, and also Pablo Larrazabal, who was tied 20th. And Gordy went for Louis Oosthuizen, who was a non-runner, unfortunately, didn't play in the event. Søren Kjelstrup missed the cut. That means the points for the week, 10 for Rob, minus 5 for Gordy, and the latest score, the presenter 65, the co-presenters on 20. Also, a reminder, our guest last week was journalist Matt Cooper. He went for Tapio Pulkkinen, who was tied 20th, and Henrik Stenson, who missed the cut. All our guests do give us a tip, but it's just for fun. Generally, they're usually better, certainly better than John, but there you go. In the fantasy race to Dubai game, Sebastian, with his team La Dunes, had the best week, thanks to a side containing Bryson DeChambeau, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter and Matt Wallace. Overall, Pat, with his or her team, Cherry Villa, tops the rankings with 4,593 points. But of course, it is still very early days. Have you got your team in yet, John?
I've got to be honest and say no.
See, I missed out for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put my team in this week and I expect you to do likewise.
Yeah.
Jack, have you got a team?
I haven't, but I'm going to jump on the bandwagon
exactly.
with you this week.
See?
That was the plan.
You see, that's what we want, a little bit of camaraderie here, John. So we'll get our teams in. Make sure you do. If you want to get involved, head to europeantour.com and register your team. Now, on the PGA Tour, world number one, Justin Rose, held off the challenge of Adam Scott to win the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. The Englishman finished on 21 under, with Scott 2 shots off the pace on 19 under. Rory McIlroy finished 7 shots off the lead in a tie for 5th. Justin Rose, Jack, with new clubs. What a performance that was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you always worry for players when they make big changes to their setup kind of in between the season. But realistically, even if you, as I heard him say in an interview this week, even if you stick with TaylorMade, Callaway, whatever, so TaylorMade in Justin Rose's case, you're still tweaking between season. You still might be encouraged to use a new driver, put some new irons in the bag, new wedges, whatever. So you're always feeling around this time of the year. You know, Justin's incredibly detail-oriented man. I don't think he leaves any stones unturned. So of all the players to be concerned about with an equipment change, he's low on my list, I think.
But you know, some players would say, oh, it's not the same feel.
He's caught a few players out over the years actually changing equipment.
Really?
Yeah. McIlroy was quite a high-profile one when he switched over to Nike. I think that was spoken about as a teething issue, but you never quite know, do you, the truth of these
things. He doesn't just go in the pro shop and pick them up, you know. They're prepared, they've tried them, they've tested them. I think the press got a bit harsh on him with McIlroy when it didn't work out with the Nike gear. I don't think there was anything wrong with the gear, but no, brilliant performance from
Rose.
Didn't
start off the final round well, did he? He gave the opposition a bit of a chance, but they just couldn't take it.
Yeah, he had a really rocky spell, but then towards the end of the back nine, he found his first birdie of the round and then really kind of settled into his groove. And from there, he just completely didn't look back. And everyone else really left their charges too late. Playing alongside Adam Scott and John Rahm, you expected a bigger challenge. Scott left it too late. 4 birdies in the last 4 holes, but hadn't done much up to that point in that round.
Played with the flag in on the putting green for every single putt, John Adam Scott.
Well,
missed one from about 12, 14 inches, something like that. With a flag in.
This putting with the flag in, I've got to say.
Adam Scott can't putt. Well, not recently anyway, and that's a positive for him.
Yeah, but the pins at the Open have a metal bottom on them because it's susceptible to heavy winds. It's much thicker. They won't be putting at the Open with
the
flag in.
They might change it.
Pardon?
They might change it.
Might change what?
Well, the Open might have to change it if they're going to be taking flags out. Surely
they
some
won't
players...
They won't.
But some are going to take it out, aren't they?
Listen, don't be ridiculous. The flags are heavier on a Lynx golf course so that they don't blow out the cup.
So you're suggesting that even though there's a rules change, you can't take the flag out?
Of course you can take the flag out. What I'm saying is the ball has more chance of bouncing out on a Lynx green because the bottom of the flag is made of metal. Mm. It's
You'll
not
make
made
Bryson
of fiberglass.
Will make sure that he knows.
Mm. Well, I'm sure he will.
He's obviously improved Adam Scott's putting.
Oh, for sure. He's never been a man who's looked very comfortable on the greens. I think that's clear of most people, unless it's kind of for medical reasons, that have kind of used the long brim handle putter in the past. Of course, you're not allowed to anchor anymore, but it hasn't stopped the likes of Bernhard Langer, you know.
DeChambeau anchors.
You know, how does DeChambeau anchor?
Goes all the way up the forearm.
The arm, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
So he does anchor. When that gets banned, he'll be in a mess. I think that
and
should
that's
be banned.
Gonna, and that's going
to
be banned.
I think that should be banned. You should not be connected to your body. And it's locked. He has those high wrists and he just rocks it. But it's locked up his arm. I disagree with it.
Is Kuchar the same?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a personal thing, isn't it, putting? There's so many different techniques in the world and there's lots that attract Chris. And Bernhard Langer attracts a lot of criticism on the Champions Tour
because
he's kind of pinching the shirt against the top of the putter handle. So he's coming as close to anchoring as you possibly can, but he's not technically anchoring. It's a difficult one.
It's taking the nerve factor out of it. But the club should not be attached to you when you're putting. Watson, for years, he could have opted to... He's such a traditionalist, he never changed. But part of the game is nerves and having to cope with pressure. And if you're locking something to your body and eliminating the hands, you have an advantage, there is no question. I think that will be dealt with in the nearest future.
Talking of putting, but on a slightly cheerier note, Justin Rose, I think that's been the big secret to his real upturn. He's obviously been incredibly consistent for several years, won a major back in 2013, but it's this thing that's taken him into this new echelon, into the contention to be world number one and now being a kind of a pretty confirmed and solid world number one is the putting and the improvements he's made there. You see other players who, you know, the likes of McIlroy, who's struggling to kind of improve certain areas of the game and elevate because of the level of competition. Justin Rose is coming on leaps and bounds in the areas where he was a little weaker. In 2016 on the PGA Tour, strokes gained putting, he ranked 136th. In 2017, 123rd. And in 2018, it was 21st. So there's an incredible progression last year. And that's why he won the FedEx Cup. That's why he's world number one at the moment.
Is that the best metric, strokes gained putting, when we're looking at putting stats? Because there's an awful lot of putting stats when you go on the website.
Yeah, I think the strokes gained categories in general are the most important to look at because they compare you against the rest of the field directly in terms of shots gained per round. So, yeah, I think it's an important metric and Justin's clearly proving that the putting's come on so far.
I'm a massive fan of strokes gained. I know Rob Lee thinks it's a bit Emperor's New Clothes. John, where do you stand on it?
I'm a bit with Rob, I think.
Yeah, I thought so.
Why
does that not surprise me at all?
Well, you know, we've been around the game a long time and it's like the putting stats, isn't it? If you're putting from the fringe and you take two putts on every green, it counts as one putt. Once you've got the club out, it should count. As far as I'm concerned. So if you putt on the edge of the green, you're putting.
Mm.
But it would count only as one putt.
I was going to say, strokes gain doesn't matter for something like that, does it? Because it's against the rest of the field and what they do.
Yeah, perhaps not. And I think in the case of Justin Rose, that's become slightly irrelevant because Justin Rose's tee to green is absolutely phenomenal as well. I think he's ranked inside the top 10 for tee to green on the PGA Tour since 2011. That was the last time he finished outside of that because he's so dominant in that category and that statistic. So he hits the greens and he's not necessarily, his proximity to the hole isn't necessarily that incredible and yet his putting stats have come on. So I think in the case of Justin, yeah, that metric's really impressive.
One final word on Justin Rose. Do you know what he won apart from a barrel load of cash for his success at the Farmers?
Ask me one on car maintenance.
He won a surfboard.
Handy.
Doesn't seem like a surfer, Justin.
No.
Or am I doing a disservice?
No, I think there are a few golfing surfers. I think Rafa Carrebeo is keen on surfing. Adam Scott is a keen surfer.
Wasn't
so maybe Scott coming second is...
Didn't Jeff Ogilvie injure himself surfing or canoeing before a start of the season and completely ruined his year? I can't remember. A good few years ago now.
Yeah, bow to your greater knowledge.
Well, occasionally.
Paul Casey did himself in snowboarding.
Yes, he did. He did. John, snowboarding, surfing, what's your preference? What are you better at?
I've always found a bit slippy, to be honest. I don't mind a bit of table tennis.
Now, we need the top 10 in the world rankings. How do we stand, John?
Well, the top 10 in the world rankings are as follows. Justin Rose at the top from Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson third, Justin Thomas fourth, Bryson DeChambeau fifth, John Rahm sixth, Xander Schauffele seventh, Rory McIlroy eighth, Francesco Molinari ninth, and Jason Day, amazingly, is 10th.
Next up on the European Tour is the Saudi International, powered by SBIA. Another tremendous field featuring Justin Rose, world number one, Brooks Koepka, double major winner last year, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau is staying on, Sergio Garcia, Hao Tong Li, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Eddie Pepperell, Ernie Els, who has been playing very well recently. Rolled back the years in Dubai, played pretty well in South Africa as well. Fantastic field, John, this week.
Yes,
you can't deny
is.
That. A new event on the European Tour.
Yes, and Saudi are putting huge amounts into golf over the next 10 years or so. And, the inaugural event with an absolutely stunning field. But this is a huge tournament down in that part of the world. And, of course, the Desert Swing grows year by year with Oman, Saudi, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, and of course, Dubai.
Can we imagine, Jack, it's going to be similar-ish, certainly conditions maybe, to what we've seen in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Qatar over the years?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all we can go with, to be honest. We haven't got any other knowledge, have we? We've never seen a tournament played on this golf course. It'll be really intriguing. But yeah, it's going to be around the 30-degree mark. There's going to be a bit of breeze because of the flat landscape out there. So I'm sure it'll be a good challenge for the players.
So that means best golfer wins. We've not got any one horses for courses. It's a level playing field, John.
Not necessarily.
Why?
The best golfer
Why?
Wins.
Why? Surely.
Because they're all extremely good players. Mm. Who's the best golfer there, then?
Justin Rose. Well, I'm going to go for Justin Rose.
Because
he's world number one and it's a level playing field.
Well, it's a good point, but if only golf was as simple as that. What's your name? Dan.
Well, it was last week for Justin, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. You don't get to world number one without having some credentials. And he is awesome now, but he's got some strong competition this time. But I reckon I've got the winner.
Okay, let's just briefly talk about one or two of the players then towards the top of the world rankings that are playing here. We mentioned Justin Rose. We talked about him as he's just won the Farmers. Brooks Koepka has had an okay start to the calendar year. Showed up pretty well in Abu Dhabi for a number of rounds. Obviously, his focus is on majors, but he always seems to be the type of player that does enjoy playing European Tour events because obviously he was a former member of the European Tour.
Yeah, of course, his background, having come through as a Challenge Tour graduate and then played in the European Tour, won events like the Turkish Airlines Open in the past, it obviously holds a special place in his heart. And he's also been very outspoken about the kind of the atmosphere of the European Tour, and still to this day preferring playing events on the European Tour because there's a bit more camaraderie, there's a bit more kind of, you know, going out to a pub and having a drink, meeting up with other players and going out to restaurants during the tournament week, which you don't see so much on the PGA Tour.
Dustin Johnson, what sort of chance has he got this week? John, he seems to always show up in events. He seems to be a fast finisher when he doesn't win, so his form seems to be bubbling along nicely. But is he going to threaten this week? Has he done anything recently to suggest that he's going to win?
I watched him in Abu Dhabi quite a bit. Every time I see him hit it, he looks impressive. He looks to be a good putter. I think his mood has a lot to do with Johnson, how he performs. But he's certainly got the credentials to pinch this tournament. Whether he will or not, we'll see. But everyone who's down there is going to be thrilled if he gets into contention. And Koepka, I watch Koepka a lot in Abu Dhabi. Wow, he's a different gravy, that bloke. He just hits it so far, just looks so strong. And when he's on, he's almost unstoppable, I would say.
We've seen the renaissance of Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter, I guess, over the last year or so. Jack, could we see another win for any of the Englishmen there mentioned?
Well, they've both had a good start to the Desert Swing, both played well in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. Westwood, last week in an interview, described himself as one of the... Well, I think he got questioned along this line. It was a bit of a leading question, but his answer was basically confirming that he's one of the most dangerous players in world golf at the moment because he doesn't really care about the outcome, doesn't care about his results. We interviewed him a couple of months ago with Golfing World in the wake of his win in South Africa, and he was just very relaxed. He's working on what he's working on the range. He hasn't like given up on the technical side of the games, but with his girlfriend Helen Storey on the bag, he just seems in an incredibly relaxed place. And, you know, he wasn't focusing too much on getting into the world top 50 for Augusta. I think he's just going to let the good golf take care of itself.
What about Poulter's winner in Houston, of course, on the PGA Tour last year? He seems to be playing everywhere every week. He was been globe-trotting, hasn't he, over the course of last
month. Well, he played well in Abu Dhabi on a big, big golf course. A lot of the longer players could take lines off the tee there that he couldn't. And he played great again last week in Dubai. We don't know anything about this golf course. I think Poulter is a clever enough golfer to put himself up there again. He's obviously on a confidence high.
One last player to mention before we get some tips from you guys. Eddie Pepperell winning Qatar. Could it be his week, John?
Well, he's my tip.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, go on, then tell us why.
Because he's won in the desert, and
okay.
I think his game's
Anything
gone
else?
Up
Come on, give us a bit more insight here, John.
His game's gone up another level. He had his struggles where he had to go back to the tour school, which is a horrible place to go. But he's won out in Qatar, and I just think his game has been elevated. Do you want to know who my other tip is?
Go on, then.
It's Adri Arnaus from Spain.
Ah, winner in Oman, was it, last year?
Yeah, he won the grand final.
Yeah.
Keep your eye on that name this year. Hits it prodigious distances. So it's not about always about that, but it certainly helps if you can give it a hoof. He's the full salad, as I say.
And what does that mean again?
Nothing missing.
I see. Jack, who are you going for? Your score won't count to either the presenter or co-presenter, but we allow you to have a go.
My main tip is going to be Patrick Reed, one of the big players in the field. Had a good end to 2018 after going off the radar a little bit in the wake of his Masters victory, like so many people do. Had a good end to the year. Came second in Dubai, of course, top 10 at the WGC. So, yeah, and he's in good form as well. He's coming off the back of two, I think, tied 13th finishes on the PGA Tour. So, yeah. He's my man.
Is he friends again with Jordan Spieth?
Had the man hug on the first tee,
didn't they?
At Torrey the other day, Jordan initiated, not Patrick. Patrick looked like he was avoiding eye contact for all he was worth.
But. Well,
Jordan said that, we've seen each other an awful lot of times and this was just for you lot talking about the media, but it did seem a bit awkward.
I think they probably have seen each other a lot in passing, but I think they have been avoiding eye contact like Patrick Reed was in that first tee. It was interesting.
Did you not see this one, John?
What's the story with those two? A little bit of...
Well, in the wake of the Ryder Cup, of course, obviously, that press conference and Patrick Reed kind of throwing everyone under the sun, under the bus, throwing the captain under the bus, throwing Jordan under a bit. Tiger as well, kind of criticising Tiger and like hinting that playing with Tiger was hampering him and bringing him down, which he's not afraid of a bit of controversy, is he?
I'm going to go for Justin Rose. As I mentioned before, I'm going to go for Joost Luiten as well, who was just outside.
From the Netherlands?
Yeah, just outside the top 50 last year. Bit of a cheat. Oh, we've only got one of Jack's, haven't we? So another one from Jack.
Well, yeah, my outside the race to Dubai top 50 last year, my tip's going to be Beef. From that list, because he showed some signs of life this week in Dubai. Shot, I think it was a really good round on moving day. He seems to be in a really good place. We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and I had a little chat with his caddy away from him, away from his ears. And his caddy, I know he's obviously got his best interests at heart and is going to talk his man up, but he was really, really confident about Beef's year coming after a couple of quiet years.
He's fully back on the European Tour, isn't he, now, having sort of tried to play both?
Yeah, I think he struggled to balance. I think he also had some stuff going on away from the golf course last year, which took his mind away from the game of golf, as it can for so many players across their career. It's a long career, and they're going to have moments like this. But he seems to be positive and seems to be on an upward curve. I think he's recently got engaged. So, yeah, all things are good in Beef's world at the moment.
We saw Shane Lowry do that as well, didn't we? Tried to play both tours, John. Now back on the European Tour, he's won again. I mean, unless you're right at the very, very top, that's got to be the way to go. You've got to choose one or the other.
Well, I can imagine it's very difficult. But yeah, if you're in the top 50 in the world, you're playing WGCs and majors. But if you're chasing around playing regular tournaments, it's a hard thing to fit in, jet lag, scheduling everything. And then if you're not playing great, adjusting, where do I go next? So I think it'll do him good to concentrate over here. I can see Lowry winning a major without any question.
Well, we wish all the selections the very best this week, especially mine, of course. That is your lot for now. Next week, we will review the Saudi International powered by SBIA and look ahead to the ISPS Handa Vic Open. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. And do leave us a review if you're downloading the podcast from iTunes. But for now, from John Hawksworth...
Goodbye.
Make sure you get those layers on, John. And Jack Haywood.
Goodbye.
And from me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We will see you next time.